Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
So, things actually happened this week.
Finally. At long last. Many things. More things than I don't know. I wouldn't say more than we expected, but there were some interesting things.
Did you buy anything?
The only thing I think is up for order, AirTags, right now.
Everything else goes up next week, I think.
I did order some AirTags. I ordered a 4-pack of AirTags. I initially was like, I should order a 4-pack. And then I was like, maybe I'll just order one. And then I thought about it and was like, I don't know. I mean, like, it's actually the rare good deal from Apple. Like, there's actually like a volume discount, which is unlike Apple. And I thought, well, maybe Kat will use some of these. I can convince her that she'll want to put them on her keys or something. So I'll get 4 just in case. And then we'll have them for our bags when we eventually start traveling. And again, I won't need to buy more. So yeah, I bought 4 this morning and a Belkin keychain attachment for it. So that's where we're at.
All right. And then there's next
week.
Did you buy any AirTags? I didn't buy any AirTags. No. I'm still trying to figure it out. There's one thing that I could think that I could potentially use AirTags for, I was thinking, which is, except it's already come and gone, which is there's this purple stuffed toy that one of my cats likes to bring to me as if it was her kill. And she meows a lot and she drops it and then she wants praise and it's great. And we lost it. And I don't know where it is. And she can't find it, obviously. And I can't find it anywhere. And I thought, this is what AirTags are for, is you got to sew an AirTag into that little stuffy so that we can find it when it gets lost. But it's too late now.
You need a retroactive AirTag.
I know. I need AirTags that go back in time.
I did have a moment yesterday. I don't need an AirTag for this, but I did have a moment yesterday where I sat down to have a FaceTime call with someone. I was like, I need to refer something on my laptop. And I went looking at my laptop and I was like, it's not in like the two places that I thought it would be. And I was like, I need air. Oh, wait, hold on. I can just use Find My anyways on it. So I did. I made it beep. And it turned out to be shoved. Literally, it was shoved in the couch cushions. I was like, why is it shoved in the couch cushions? I almost never do that. But it made me think of that whole video with the guy going into the couch cushions.
That's right. That's right.
Accurate.
A lot of change down there. But not an Apple TV remote.
Not an Apple TV remote. I think the only other thing I'm buying is an Apple TV remote. I'm not in the market. This is difficult. Like, I have a 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which is the last before they revised the exterior.
Right.
And the new ones look great. I have no, like, you know, one of these moments, I'm sure I will get one. But I don't have a compelling reason for one right now, mainly because most of what I spend my time doing is working on either the iMac when I'm at the desk or the M1 Air when I'm not. And I don't go anywhere. So if I were traveling more, as I am in a normal year, I think there would be some appeal to upgrading the iPad because it's lighter than my laptop. Used to be I was using an 11-inch MacBook Air. So that was like, well, it's the Air and the laptop and the iPad are each about the same weight. And now the iPad will be presumably lighter than my MacBook Air. And it's nice to carry around and stuff or take the coffee shop or what have you. But I rarely use the iPad around the house. Mainly I use it for, it's like a second screen when I'm doing D&D stuff on TPK. Like I've got my character sheet up on it or whatever, but I don't need to get a better iPad for that. The only downside to the iPad Air right now, or the Pro I have right now, is that its battery is screwed. Something is wrong with the current version of iPad OS. And like, if I leave it out at night, it will drain itself all the way down to nothing. Don't know why. It's not doing anything.
Weird.
But yeah, so I'm not in the market for that, and I don't think I think the as cool as the iMac is, I think I'm inclined to wait for the other shoe to drop there.
Yeah, this is
because I have a 27.
This is honestly the thing that I am most surprised by because rumors and reports from inside Apple that are done by people like Mark Gurman and Ming-Chi Kuo in the supply chain, like they tend to do a good job of spoiling the actual hardware surprises. However, there are still surprises to be had, and one of the surprises is how people react. You know, I mostly feel like I'm jaded, and I understand how people are going to react to any given announcement. But I did not expect so many people to not understand that there are two iMacs. And yet, so many people this week were like, oh, I guess this is the iMac now. I don't know. It doesn't seem powerful enough. And it's like, no, it's the small iMac. There is still, yeah, they're still selling the 27-inch iMac, and the 27-inch iMac is going to be replaced by something better that runs Apple Silicon later this year. Come on. It's obvious. And
they did this with the MacBook Pro last fall. Right? We had the same discussion about
this. Why did they eliminate the 16-inch yeah, MacBook Pro? Because they didn't. That's why. Because it's waiting. Why did they, and actually, Dan, why did they eliminate the really nice, powerful Mac Mini? They didn't. Mm. It's still for sale, running Intel. Like, are you getting it yet? But what you also see, and this is not about a misunderstanding, but you also see people who are like us, who are like, oh, this looks really great. I can't get this because this is the low-end one and I want the high-end one, so I'm going to have to wait mm-hmm. around for that. Because that's how I feel. It's like, these iMacs are adorable, and I could put one on my desk and do my job, and it would be great. It really would. It would not get me much of a benefit from my iMac Pro, right? It'd be a smaller screen. Mm-hmm. It looks all pretty, but it'd be a smaller screen than the 27 and would be faster in some things than my iMac Pro, which makes me heartbroken that it's so they've come so far so fast. But in other ways, not. And I know there's another one coming ultimately that will be faster than what they have now. So it's that pain of like, This is a really great iMac for the people who want a low-end iMac, the smaller low-end iMac, which has always been a very particular market. Like, this is amazing. It's so much better than that old one had been untouched for like several years, just untouched.
Right. Well, it was the placeholder for people who wanted like the bare bones, the education iMac or the bare bones, right, like cheapest iMac you could get, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you don't need, if it's somebody checking someone in at the hotel front desk or receptionist at a lobby or something like that, you don't need a big 27-inch with power, right? You need, right, a cute, sure, little, and so,
or a kiosk or
and
something.
And so now,
right,
they'll, yeah, have these cute little colored models. And the other thing that get me, and I will say this is also a little bit of a surprise, and I shouldn't be surprised by this because, like I said, I should be jaded to this now. The people who pronounce this product a failure because they don't like the colors, and what's really baffling about that, first off, think outside yourself, right? But second,
yeah,
if you look at that, like I posted that picture of Tim Cook in front of the 7 iMacs, and they've got the hello, and the iMacs are all matched. And I on Twitter, I actually drew in an exclamation point in gray because, like, it's literally like, look at these 6 beautiful colors, and they're reflected from the Apple logo, and they're reflected in the little hello. And then there's also this gray one, this silver one, that is just like the old iMacs in that it's just not a color. And like, Mike said 6 colors and not a color, and it really has tickled me, yeah, all week. But like, but that's the truth, is like, well, if you don't like the colors, they made the silver one. Like, they didn't stop making the silver one. It's right there.
We were just talking about how worried I was over on Fusion with Christina Warren and Stephen Hackett, and we were just talking about how worried we were that when they come out with a 27-inch, it'll just be in like silver and spray space gray.
I know. No, that's
oh, this is for pros. Yeah. It's the serious one. No, give us the colors.
Yeah, my worst fear, and again, it's fine. It'll be what it'll be. But like my worst Apple at its worst kind of thing is going to be, they'll be like, no, these do have colors. There's forest green and midnight blue, which are so dark as to be indistinguishable from dark gray or black. Yeah.
Just put the colors on the whole lineup. I mean, it's the same thing. It is the same problem with the iPhone, where it's like, I love the iPhone 12 Pro, but I wish it came in the colors of the iPhone 12, because the colors of the iPhone 12 are
great,
beautiful, and the colors of the iPhone 12 Pro are, I guess they're colors.
Yeah, boring.
Yeah. So I don't know. The iMac thing, I have a lot of questions about the iMac, and there's a lot of things I like about it. Somebody was writing, it was MKBHD, was talking about the having to put the headphone jack on the side because it was too deep to fit in the current size. But it's like, honestly, I kind of feel like the headphone jack should always have been in the side. It's annoying to plug it in on the back. In fact, it's annoying to plug anything in on the back, especially now that you have 4 ports, 2 of which are slower than the others. Good luck figuring that out without turning your entire iMac around, which is a choice. And it's like, I know why they did it, but it's not very usable. And so this is my new, I pitched on the Rebound this week, my new accessory, which is like a little mirror that hangs off your iMac so you can tell which one is the Thunderbolt port and which one's just the USB port.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So, and again, I understand why they were backed into that corner, but it is unfortunate because it is a bit of a limitation. And then, as you and I discussed, and I know both separately and together, the lack of a height adjustment is a real bummer because it's just, I you have to stick it on something. It's too low.
Part of me thinks that they know very well that height adjustment would be better, and this is the cheap iMac, and they're just not going to put a
So maybe the bigger one will have one.
So this is a topic that I did not expect from this week, which is I think possibly emerges in part from a misjudgment of the iMac as two products, or as one product, I guess. Is a lot of people referring to the higher-end iMac as the iMac Pro, which it has not been, right? Traditionally, the last couple of years, there's been the 21.5 iMac, the 27-inch iMac, and the iMac Pro, which is also 27 inches. Three different models. And I've seen a lot of people this week kind of start referring to the 27-inch iMac that will be replaced, that the replacement will be the iMac Pro. And, like, I don't see any evidence for that. But at the same time, when you think about
it's marketing. They could call it that.
They totally could
them.
Call it that. And then that, that would be the differentiator between the two iMacs, is rather than saying we have a 24-inch iMac and a 27 or 30 or whatever it is, what if we have an iMac and an iMac Pro? But they might not, they also might not do that. But if they do rebrand, or even if they don't, like a higher end, more expensive model that's got more power, maybe different colors, boring colors, maybe that is where you do things like have an adjustable stand. Like it's just nicer all around because it's the more expensive computer.
Yeah, as we were talking about this on Fusion, and just talking about how it's everything's new because they're redesigning. As they said, this is the first Mac really designed around the M1, unlike sticking it in the previous chassis from the Intel models. So nothing stops them from redefining how they want to position that lineup. My favorite marketing choice, by the way, from this week is describing the iMac as the 4.5K, which I think is weird. It's just a weird choice to call it the 4.5K iMac.
Yeah, more Ks. It's a half more K.
Yeah, it's half a K more. Yeah. Half a K more. Couldn't quite get that to 5K, I guess, to fit that display in that size.
Well, no.
For
24, that's what they got. Yeah. That's they literally, I think,
right.
Just
that's fine.
Took the same number of pixel density and fit it in the space. Yeah,
I totally get why they did it. I just think it was a fun branding decision. So I don't know. I think this iMac is really promising. I like a lot of the choices they've made with it. I don't mind they took the power brick out. I think that's fine. I think the power brick just goes on the floor. It's not going to bug me.
Somebody said something that I thought, I know why they won't do this, because you want it to be self-contained, and it's not quite self-contained because of the power brick. I think the power brick is kind of clever too, and there's some interesting stuff they might do with it down the road.
Putting Ethernet on there was clever,
right. And at which point I start to say, well, you know, maybe you could stick
what
some USB-C
on
there too. That might be convenient because it gets it off the desk, and you just have this pretty color matched woven cable going off the desk. The alternate argument is, in the long run, why don't you just put the computer in the power brick and you've got essentially a Mac Mini with an external display? Like, yeah, I mean, there's something to be argued that at some point you just, you know, why is it even in the computer anymore? But I think Apple's ultimate goal with the iMac is that the power brick will disappear again at some point, that they will miniaturize it to the point where the power brick doesn't have to be outside. And I was talking to Stephen about the power brick, just the two of us, not on a podcast. I know that's weird, but I know that it bugs him. And it's like, yeah, it's another thing. It's another complication. And I simultaneously flash back to the ADC connector back in the day where it was like, it's power and video and a completely non-standard connector. And I also flash forward to 15 years from now, 20 years from now, where people are like, well, I got this iMac, but what power cable do I use for it? And then somebody's oh boy, well,
there was this
they
time.
Made,
you had to
they
get
made this proprietary power cable that you have to find. And like, yeah, that's because that's what it is now. I'm not worried about I think it's super clever engineering, but yeah, it is an extra complication. But I like the Ethernet. I mean, I have an Ethernet cable snaking through my arm on my desk that I would love to have it not be there.
I just had to put a hub on my USB ports on my iMac because I just hit the point of being like, I've got slightly too many and I hate it. I hate there are so many wires hanging off back here. It's like, but I've got using every single port. So I've got like two hard drives and a microphone and now a Stream Deck and a light and a webcam. And I'm like, put all this stuff on. And it's like, I hate that it all hangs off the back. It makes it so cluttered.
Yeah, that's why I keep thinking, like, if you're going to do this, you should ride more data in that brick and, like, reduce the number of ports that are on the back of the iMac and stick... And again, the M1's not capable of this, but, like, a future iMac that has a processor capable of more ports, why would you not put USB on the brick, too? Because it's following the same argument, it gets it off the desk where it's ugly. Yeah. And especially if these things are meant to be beautiful, like, you need some ports on the back so that you can plug in something like ad hoc, right? But for your infrastructure, that does not need to be visible. Like, just have the pretty cable disappear and then... Yeah. You know, don't look under my desk. The stuff I got Velcroed under there. Whew, yeah, don't look.
Yeah, right. And I think that it's ideally, as we've discussed in other circumstances, Apple would love to have a computer with no ports on it, right. I'm sure. And because I think it's always felt very out of place to have the ports even on the back because, like, yeah, you got to plug stuff in there. But it is annoying, right? Like, trying to figure out where to plug something in, especially when on my iMac, or the current iMacs previous to this, where it's like you've got a USB-A port on the back and you're like, I don't know, try to jam it in there, see what works. but yeah, I think that it's... I think it's an interesting idea to offload some of that elsewhere, and it raises a lot of questions. I mean, the Mac Mini also is a great question, too, because that seems like, again, it's a place where they shoved the M1 in the existing chassis, and it's like, well, but the M1 and the board for that are way smaller than, like, the old Intel board. Yeah. Couldn't you make the Mac Mini smaller? And it's like, well, maybe. Maybe that's in the offing, but, yeah, maybe not until...
Not yet. Yeah, there's the idea of the M1 as a transitional form, right? Like the first three computers that came out, it was literally, this is not a different computer. It just has an M1 in it. It looks exactly the same. The iMac, I guess I didn't really play this up, but if you think about it, the iMac is the first new design Apple Silicon Mac, right? Yeah. It is not a transitional.
Like they said designed around that, right? Like it was not something that we just shoved in. It was just into the existing model. We actually built this with the M1 in mind, and it shows. I mean, I think there's a reason they made it so thin and everything, and decided to make it, and added the colors and all of that. Like it's still recognizably an iMac, but it is also very different from the iMacs that we've seen before. I want to talk about the M1 a little bit because I think it's fascinating that they made this decision to put in the iPad. I have a lot of thoughts about this. Like, a lot's going on here, right? So the M1, we all, I think, basically took as given. I can't remember if they said it or not, but we all took as given. It's essentially based on the A14. So it's similar generationally, if nothing else. Yeah. It certainly seems like it's closer than that even. So... they could have gone either way with putting an A14X in there, but they decided to put the M1 in the iPad Pro. And what strikes me as fascinating about this is just this, and it's a marketing decision in part, but also, the fact that you now have an iPad Pro that has an M1, you can attach a keyboard and a trackpad to it, you can plug in an external display, and all of a sudden I find myself thinking, the iPad Pro has a lot more in common with a MacBook than it does an iPhone now, it feels like. In some ways, in some ways, that branch of the iPad OS seems like it is tilting a little bit more towards the Mac side of the equation, which I think is fascinating.
It's a trend that's been happening for a while, too, right? Where they've had this whole message of like your iPad apps come to the Mac with Catalyst, and then they have the whole new like menuing thing in iOS, which really like on the iPad, it's very much like how do we do the equivalent of a menu bar, which is a kind of a pop-up drop-down kind of menu thing. Like they've been pushing the iPad and the Mac closer together because they have the larger screens and they have that more capability than you're going to do on a phone. This sends that message too. I mean, let's be clear. M1 is just a marketing name. This is essentially the same line as the A12X. This is the iPad. What used to be, we used to consider the more capable iPad processor variant of the iPhone processor is now, and now we can say it with some authority, is now the more capable Mac and iPad variant. And it's got a new name, the M1, which as I think it was John Syracuse said, stands for my pad. Yeah. Apple computers.
Yeah. It makes it really hard to draw that line now, right? Because it's like, oh, it used to be like the A series were for the mobile processor, and it's like, oh, the M is for Mac. And now it's like, whoop, nope, that's no, you can't really draw that line anymore.
A series is for the iPhone and the Apple TV. The M series is
HomePod
is for at least the iPad Pro and the Mac, although I suspect that this M1 processor in 2 or 3 years will be in all the low-end iPads too, right? Like that they'll eventually get the M1 at the point where the iPad Pro, or well, they might not though. They might get like A14 instead, right? Which they've done that.
So, and this is the other interesting question that it raises to me, right? Like, so now that all of the devices that Apple makes, you know, or all of the new devices it rolls out, I'm going to set aside the Apple TV and the HomePod and the Apple Watch and stuff like that. All of it's based on this chips that come from the same generation. We're used to seeing a new generation of A chip every year, which means, in theory, a new generation of the M chip could happen every year as well. Does this change how Apple rolls out Mac updates or the frequency, right? They're not bound to Intel's roadmap anymore, which often seemed like a frustration for Apple rolling out new computers. Is this something where we're going to see, like, you know, the M1 was this year, the M2 is this fall, the M3 comes the year after that? Like, and if so, given that they're already revamping, like, the A series chips every year, is this just become, like, did the Mac move to more of an iPhone style update? I don't know. I mean, part of me feels like they want to keep it slower because it's a more expensive purchase and it lasts longer. They also could. They could speed bump the processor every single year, I guess.
Yeah, this is the great mystery, is what their overall philosophy is going to be. So, like, I don't think they're going to have a variety. Like, a lot of things people expect from Macs are because Intel had a broad range of processors. People have been trained by that. Mm-hmm. Like, Apple's not going to make a broad range of processors. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Like, it's not going to happen. So they will make some, but like every one of them is an effort, and they obviously are going to use them across their product line.
Right. They're every Mac will have the best processor available.
I think so.
With the exception of some of that binning stuff that they do to keep the price
right
down.
Binning, and they, I can see them doing like some variants with different
with like an X variant
numbers of
like
cores,
graphics.
But it's not going to be a lot. And you're right. I think we may see binning. I think we may see things where it's like, well, you can get the 16 core version or the 12 core version or the 8 core version, and it's really the same chip with a certain number of cores approved and turned on. the ones that didn't make it was 16. But that's it. Like, and that's why I think I'm kind of down on the idea of the M1X now. I think it's possible that they could do it. It's an M1 with more processors, but like the M1 is already an A14 with more processors. If I had to bet today, I would say they'll just be an M2, and the M2 is going to be in the fall, and it's going to be based on the A15, and they're going to come out together, and the M2 is going to roll into the high-end products. It's possible that there'll be something in between. I mean, it depends on how quickly they want to get the whole product line turned over, but they seem to be being really conservative about this in a way that makes sense. Honestly, they have knocked off all the low-end Macs. And,
right, exactly.
And the high,
it's very methodical.
And the high-end Macs will be next, and then what happens after that? I think the other question is, like, in the long run, what is the next MacBook Air look like? And I find that kind of mysterious, right? Because how do they, you know, first off, I'm not sure there's a next MacBook Air for another couple of years. Like, honestly, the M1 has made the M1 products are so solid that I think they can just let them sit there for a while. But that'll be the question.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because it's the idea of, like, previously we have seen them let products kind of sit around if they felt comfortable with it. Like the Mac Mini, right? The Mac Mini would go years without an update. But if you're making your own new chip every year, is there still a reason not to sort of, or even more like regularly, every couple of years or something like that, is there a reason to let the Mac Mini sit there with a 4-year-old processor? I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I can see a world in which they think, like, well, it's still doing fine. Like, there's no reason to change it. But I can also see a world where it's like, hey, we're making these processors in such volume now, since we're producing all of these things that are kind of related, right, that we can just kind of roll this generation of chips into every like product every year or two and just keep it going. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of hard to argue with
right.
that. Like,
right. That's my question is, now that the M1 is inside five Apple devices, right? MacBook Air, Mac Mini, 13-inch MacBook Pro, iMac, and iPad Pro. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we could say that there's two iPad Pros if you want, sure. 11 and 12.9. It's in all these Apple products. The question is, where do they go next? Where do they go next?
Yeah.
And especially the lower-end Macs, where do they go next? If there's an M2 that is like the step from A14 to A15, it's going to be incrementally better. Like, is that the chip that goes in the low-end systems, and there's an M2X that goes in the high-end systems? Or is M2 the high-end? M1 just stays there, and then, like, there's another cycle, and there's M3, and the low-end gets M2, if that makes any sense. And I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible.
I mean, that would be very Tim Cook, which is like, well, the low-end is just using last year's chip now. That's just how that works. But I can also see, it depends, and I mean, these are the decisions that they made probably several years ago that we haven't seen yet. But, like, the other way to approach it is to say, the first chip generation, we're just going to do this one variant. The second chip generation, we're going to be able to reach the high end, and we're going to do two of these variants for the high end systems. We're going to do an M2, essentially, and an M2X. And the M2 goes in the low end, and the M2X goes in the high end. But honestly, I mean, it seems like they will end up there, right? In the end, it seems like they will end up scaling those processors across the product line year after year. But for this transition, I could see them saying, year one low end, year two high end, year three we'll put it together.
Right, yeah, I think that's a possibility. Otherwise, they end up with what they want to avoid, insofar as they can, is a situation like they kind of had this last year, where the iPad Pro did not get a real update last year, and then the iPad Air got updated, and it's like, well, the iPad Air chip is better than the iPad Pro, and everyone's like, well, we expect the iPad Pro will get revised. It's just going to be a little while, and I think I feel like a lot of that came out of probably some development, maybe wrinkles or hiccups here and there, just timing, like, just didn't work out right. And like, I think they want to avoid that because it makes people scratch their heads and think more about, like, well, do I want to buy this product, or do I want to wait for the product that I'm like 90% sure is coming within the next few months? I mean, having a nice sort of like process, even something like that with like a trickle down process where it's like, now, okay, now the lower end get the last year's chip instead, feels like it at least has a degree of predictability about it that lets people feel comfortable about the product they're buying potentially. But nothing says they couldn't do it any number of other ways,
right,
too.
That's
and we're not going to know until we have at least one more data point.
And that's why this is so exciting, this era, is that Apple is so many times, and I think this will happen this time too, Apple gets in a groove. Apple knows what it wants to do, and then it gets in a cycle, and it's like, and then it just starts iterating. But there are those moments of discontinuity where they change, and you don't know what they're going to do next because they're not in the groove yet. They're going to get to the thing that they want to be in a groove with. And that's where we are right now, which is like, we don't know the chip strategy. We don't know how these products are turning over. It's literally Apple revisiting its whole Mac product line and how it's shaped for the first time in a while. Because I would anticipate most of these products are going to come and be like, the next set are going to be totally different than we've seen before.
Yeah, I think that's the other interesting question for sure, is we are all slotting these things into the boxes of the existing Macs, like not even physically in some cases, and also just mentally, right? And there's nothing saying Apple has to continue doing right? They can do basically whatever they want.
The iMac Pro idea, I think, is fascinating because it doesn't, even though I think it comes from a place of maybe just kind of confusion about how the iMac is set up, but like, it's a smart mistake because it's like, that's the question. It's like, if you're Apple, do you look at the two iMacs and the iMac Pro that was sitting out there and say, wait a second, why don't we just call the big iMac the iMac Pro and load all the features into it? And then instead of saying 24 iMac, 27 iMac, or 24 iMac, 30 iMac, we say iMac, iMac Pro. And the iMac Pro has a, you know, XDR display on it, because I think that's what they're going to do, right? It's mini LED. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be like the Pro Display XDR, except in an iMac, but it's going to be a high-end iMac. Sure, put an adjustable stand in there, throw that in there, high-end processors, all those things. It's like, that's better. That's actually clearer than saying we have iMac in two shapes, and they're also kind of different on the inside, but we, you know, like, that's confusing. And like, there are rumors about there being a 14-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pro, and it's like, well, that will clear up the whole fact that there's the two 13-inch MacBook Pros and all of that, and then maybe the MacBook Pro 13 eventually goes away, and the MacBook Air becomes like a MacBook, and this is their opportunity to look at their product line and be like, all right, now we're going to start moving things around.
I love this idea because it's the movie theater popcorn idea where it's like the small is now a medium or whatever. There's medium, large, and extra large. It's like, where's the small? No, there's no small. It's medium.
There's no small. Order medium.
I think small. Yeah. No, order medium, eat half. Yeah. yeah, I think this is true. I think that this gives them a lot more flexibility. It is fundamentally, psychologically, exactly where Apple has always wanted to be, which is in control of the entire product, not having to be beholden to another company for something that is as fundamental to their bright devices as the processor, right? The entire machine, to some extent, has to be designed around the processor, and Apple has done a great job of tweaking basically everything else that it can around that, right? Without having control over that, that's like a fixed point. It's like, well, we know we're getting these processors from Intel. We know they have these specs and these power requirements and this thermal requirement. We have to design our machines to fit that. And we can play with everything else, but we can't change that. And it's like, we can do whatever we want to anything inside the computer. We can choose how it goes. And that is huge. And it's only going to increase because we've seen them work more and more to building all these custom chips and stuff like that for things like power management, graphics. Like, I think that's the next big question is like, how does Apple want to handle graphics going forward? Because I think the answer is they've been working. I mean, they bought, what was it? Power VR? I can't remember what the name of the company was, but they bought some company that made graphics chips 3 or 4 years ago. And I think with an eye to basically being like, obviously they put a lot of graphics chips in the A and M series chips, but there are limitations to those.
Yeah. How do you scale
it? And it makes me wonder is like, well, are they planning on building their own discrete graphics card? Certainly possible. I don't know what that would mean for them, but yeah, it's certainly an option out there. And then there's just this week, there are more rumors about AMD graphics cards being built into some future ones too. So who knows? Lots of things going on.
I think you also have this idea of like, how do we make our product line clearer? And if you look at Apple's tendencies, a lot of these rumors that are out there start to have I can kind of see a through line. So, you know, that rumor about the Lil Mac Pro that's like more square and like the reminiscent of the G4 Cube kind of thing, that rumor that's out there.
Right.
Let's combine that with the fact that they haven't dropped the high-end Space Gray Mac Mini. And it's like, well, is their ultimate goal to have a Mac Mini Pro or a Mac Pro Mini to replace it? Like, maybe it is. Maybe this is their chance to kind of like line all those things up in a more sensible way. Also, I got to be honest here, like, they got stuck with Intel's parts, right? Like, so part of it is that they couldn't, I mean, you just said a version of this, which is part of it is that they couldn't have complete control over everything they did because they had partners that they don't have now, unnamed partners, like Intel. I can name them. So, like, there's that too, right? Which is what do you want to do? Like, you don't have to, like, some of these products, it's like the iMac Pro as a product. If you think about it, it exists only or existed only because
the Mac Pro wasn't ready.
No. Only because Xeon is a processor class from Intel. That's it. That was that, like, they're like, well, what do? Well, we can put a Xeon processor in it like we're putting in the Mac Pro. Okay, well, we'll do that. Like, but that's gone, right? So they can define Pro however they want. But like, and I'm not saying in the end, the high-end iMac got to iMac Pro low level with other class of chips, and yet it was still the iMac, and then the Xeon was the iMac Pro, and it was sort of defined by the fact that it had a Xeon processor in it. And this is that's kind of my point, is like that was a processor class decision that is defined by Intel's array of processors, and like that's out the door. And Apple will have limitations with its processors as it ramps up here, but it gets to make decisions in the processor development that are tied to their product plans, and
right.
and that allows them to define the lines between those products in any way, which is why the talk about like an iMac Pro versus iMac, I'm like, if they wanted to do that, I'm not sure they do, because they probably sell a lot of 27-inch iMacs just because they're bigger and nicer, yeah. and that if you put a Pro sure. label on them, you know, there's a counter argument that you're going to drive those people to the 24, which is less profitable. The counter argument is, you know, a lot of non-pros buy MacBook Pros because they're bigger and nicer. So maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of decisions that they can make in there and decide how they want to kind of slice it. And I think putting the 24-inch screen in there in the 20, what used to be the 21.5, essentially makes that a much more compelling product for most people.
Right.
In the same way that, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that the 27-inch will be a 30-inch.
Yeah, something like that.
Display that seems likely or closer to 30-inch. And yeah, I mean, like you said, some people will always just go for the one with the bigger screen. I think that's likely. I want to point out one other thing. So I wrote my Macworld column, which comes out on Monday, on sort of looking at products that might exist based on the kind of looking at this. So, you know, you can look at what Apple announced and say like, oh, yeah, there's probably a larger iMac coming. I think one of the other interesting things to consider is, I love this decision by Apple that you can plug a Pro Display XDR into your iPad Pro. I think it's hilarious. I think the idea of somebody buying a $6,000 monitor to connect to their iPad is great, especially when you can do like two things.
Yeah.
And it makes me sit there going like, all right, both there is a software end of this story to talk about, and there's potentially a hardware end of this story to talk about, because how core is this functionality of being able to connect an external display? Is this something that Apple is foreseeing? And as I said earlier, like you attach a keyboard and a trackpad to it, and it's got an M1 processor, and you attach a display, and it's like starts to feel like a Mac, doesn't it? And so I'm kind of curious
too,
to see.
Has an M1 has the same
right exactly.
Same
that's what I'm saying. It's closer in some ways than to a Mac than it is to an iPhone,
yes.
which is weird. But it does make me wonder, like, if this is something they're envisioning as being a big part of the functionality. I feel like they have to have a display that they want to sell
yeah.
that
yeah,
works
the,
with that.
The
it just
story
doesn't
of
make sense.
Connecting to the Pro Display XDR is hilarious. And although I picked in the upgrade draft, I picked a external display, I realized even before the event that I would probably get that wrong, because my guess is that if they want to sell an external display that is not the XDR, they will probably do it alongside, you know, if they do anything, it would be
the software.
I was thinking also, you want to have that large iMac is out there, and I wonder if it's a maybe a mini LED external display that's using the same tech that is going to be in the higher end iMac, would you wait for that iMac to do it first? Also 24, and also would it steal the thunder of the iMac 24? Because it wouldn't. It's not going to be a 24-inch display, whatever they do. That's sort of like for the general public. But I sure hope that it's coming and it will be beautiful. Because yes, the Pro Display XDR is your demo. The other problem is that there aren't a lot of external displays out there that actually fulfill some of Apple's
exactly.
resolutions that they're using on their software. And so like you're in this really weird position where Apple just keeps pointing at this $5,000 display, and it's like, yep. Yeah, I'm not going to buy that. It's not going to happen. Better.
And they're just leaving something on the table there. It feels like, especially because literally
a lot of pieces here.
Mac Mini and, you know, MacBook, any of the MacBook lines, even the iMac, all those things can benefit from an external display. And I'm sure you and I both know plenty of people who would love to buy an Apple display at a more reasonable. Let's be clear. It's not going to be a reasonable cost. It's probably still going to be like, I don't know, $2,000
It'll be way more expensive than other external displays, but more people will buy it.
But it's way cheaper than the Pro Display.
Yeah, exactly.
Though, I mean, we know a lot of people now who will look at it and go like, well, I mean, it's expensive, but it's not $5,000-$6,000. So, all right, sure.
Yeah.
And I think that even just for something as simple as like, I bought a new beautiful iMac do I want to put a cruddy looking LG display next to it that doesn't match the design and it doesn't look as nice and doesn't have functions that work sort of in concert with my beautiful Apple device? I think that in and of itself alone is like, in some ways, an affront to them, that idea. Like, they've had LG as a partner for years with those displays. I feel like at a certain point, someone in Apple is going like, I hate the fact that I have to have my beautiful, colorful iMac next to this really blah display now. And if nothing else, I can see Apple's egotism appealing to it. Just like, we could just make something that looks so much better than this.
Well, this is why it's exciting right now, because there's so much open field here, so many possibilities, so many different things that they could do, and so many other shoes remain to be dropped.
Yeah.
So many shoes are going to be dropped.
A bucket of shoes.
Just a whole box full of shoes, and they're being dumped out, and some of them hopefully will be dumped out in June at WWDC. Would like to see that. Because everybody, I'm not going to go into it here, but like everybody had their, including me, their iPad Pro take, which is like back to 2018, which is basically like, wow, this hardware is amazing. What can you do with it? And the answer is, well, it's got a lot of limitations still. As much progress as they've made since 2018, it's calling it an M1 makes really just like draws the spotlight to say, okay, it's completely as capable as a Mac on the hardware side, and on the software side, not so much.
Yeah.
Well, by that sound, my robotic vacuum cleaner has launched and is going to start making a horrible noise in the rooms next to me. So I think maybe it's time to go, but we'll be back next week. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.
Roomba.